This is Russell Jeffrey Banks, and you've been listening to The Horror Returns on the best fucking podcast out there in the whole world.
Greetings, victims. For those of you who delight in dread, who fantasize about fear, who glorify gore, welcome. You have found the place where the horror returns. Listeners, beware. This podcast contains major plot spoilers and the foulest of language. Join us in celebrating the old and the new, the best and the worst in horror.
Back one and all to The Horror Returns. I'm Lance. With me as always are my co-host Philip and Brian, and tonight we're joined by a very special guest, a gentleman who probably needs no introduction to listen to horror podcasts. I would tell you that he's horror podcast royalty, but he's so humble he would disagree. It's Duncan from Podcast Under the Stairs. How's it going, Duncan?
Honored to be here, guys. Thank you very much for the invite. This is going to be awesome.
Well, in addition to your regular gig, I've probably heard you on at least a dozen podcasts, man. What are you up to, and where can our listeners find your main show?
So the main one is Podcast Under the Stairs. It's been going for about 5 years now. It's pretty much, you can pick up on any podcatcher really, but if you search Podcast Under the Stairs online or go to tputscast.com, then it should pop up. I was going to say it's a weekly show, but it's kind of now morphed into two episodes 1 week, three episodes the other, and that's just because there's just so much stuff to talk about at the moment. A lot of my other shows have kind of ramped back, which is good because all the other stuff's going to Podcast Under the Stairs at the moment. The other show that I do on the regular is Duncan and Bo Come Correct, which is with Bo Ransdell from Legion Podcast Network, and that used to be movies. It's now kind of morphed into TV shows, so we've just finished up our look at Westworld Season 2, and we are kind of on a little bit of a hiatus ahead of the new Coen Brothers TV show, which is coming to Netflix in the fall.
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, we didn't know either. I think we're doing a commentary for Blood Simple, and we're like, the Coen brothers must have a film coming out. Turns out they're doing an anthology show, 6 parts, exclusive to Netflix. It's coming out this year. I was like, what the you know, like, to me that seems like big news, but no, apparently it's kind of flying under the radar, so should be out before the end of the year.
Hey, wow. On a different note, do you mind if I ask you a question, Duncan? Who does your t-shirts for the podcast Under the Stairs?
And the designs or the actual t-shirts?
The design.
There's a Scottish artist called Joshua Kelly. I'll hit you up with his details. He designs, most recently he's been doing a lot of kind of steelbook covers and stuff like that. But yeah, I kind of headhunted him because he did a kind of mock-up poster for one of the UK cinema brands for Neon Demon, which was like one of my favourite movies like 2 years ago. And I thought when I heard he lived in Perth, I assumed that was Perth, Australia, instead of Perth, Scotland, which makes no sense because yeah. Perth, Scotland's much closer. And yeah, it turns out he's just up the road. So bloody nice guy. His stuff is phenomenal. He's like, he's really kind of nailed that kind of comic book style. So I will drop you his line afterwards.
Nice.
Yeah.
Definitely appreciate those, man.
Yep. While I was watching Friday the 13th, I meant to mention it last week when I talked about it. Dude, I would pay money for a Jason in a Jeep t-shirt. But I cannot find one on the internet
Jason
anywhere.
In a Jeep. What the fuck?
Yeah, man. Cuz they've got in the original Friday the 13th, I mean, I guess it's his mom, but she's cruising around in an old Jeep, man. It's cool shit. It's like, why is there not like a cartoon Jason hanging out of a Jeep somewhere on a t-shirt?
Well, listen, Phil, how's your wife doing, man?
She's doing better. She's up walking around, and We're going to the doctor here next week, but she's about halfway through her recovery. Still moving a little bit slow, but doing all her normal stuff.
Brian, you guys still, you getting any snow yet?
Nope. Still good weather. Enjoying it while I can.
All right. Yeah, and before we get into the show, I'm going to do a quick shout out to listener Patrick Lear. He's kind of come down with some pneumonia, guys. So we got to
pneumonia.
Yeah, hang in there and help him get through it. I think he might have partied a little too hard with us last weekend in Chicago.
Chiz nizzle. That was a good party.
Yeah, we're thinking about you, Patrick. Get better, man. All right. So as always, we're going to start out with Cool of the Week. Duncan, you're our guest. Would you like Ooh. The honor of going first and letting us know what's the coolest thing you've seen this week?
I feel like that every week. Yeah, don't worry. I'm like, oh shit, did I watch anything?
Yeah, the thing is, I've seen about a million things, but then you get put in the spot, and it's just like you have seen nothing. Yeah. I think I'll tell you what I did start, and it kind of, I'm really into Netflix at the moment, so like obsessed with just the sheer content on Netflix that's coming out almost on a weekly basis.
Okay.
And we've just started that Dark Tourist or Dark Tourism.
And
that first episode had my mind kind of blown by this New Zealand journalist who is going around the world to places that are deliberately dangerous because this is a tourist trade thing. People travel to dangerous countries and do dangerous things. And they started off in South America. And there are narcos trips in Colombia. Kind of people that dress up like Pablo Escobar and take you about the place. It's the weirdest shit I've ever seen. Huh. And they get up as far as... He gets up as far as Mexico. And then there's a guy that does a kind of fake interactive tour if you were trying to cross the American border.
Okay.
So, and it looked terrifying, like pant-shittingly terrifying. I was like, you pay this guy to make you walk 6 hours with no food or water during the middle of the night trying to avoid people who are trying to rob you. It's all simulated, of course, but I just thought this is... The lens some people will go to just kind of blows my mind. Between that and the other thing that I watched that I'm absolutely in love with at the moment is Sharp Objects. Don't know if you guys have been checking that out.
That show
just does me right. It's that kind of Southern Gothic, kind of slight shades of season one of True Detective, just kind of in the background. And it's doing a lot of groundwork at the moment and not a lot of explaining as far as episode three. Right. But that's my jam. You know what I mean? It's shot beautifully. It's HBO. A lot of money at it. Great cast. And just this really foreboding kind of, like, nastiness that's just in the background. And every character is, like, horribly wounded in some capacity. And I'm just like, yeah, that's... As the Scotsman in me loves that. Because we're a fairly nihilistic people at the best of times. So... yeah, so I'm really digging that as well. And in terms of movies, I've probably seen loads, but nothing that is of a new variety that would blow anyone's mind. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get any shocks by saying I saw The Thing this week and it was amazing. You know what I mean? So,
good
yeah.
watch, though.
Oh, every time, man. Every time. It's the first time I've watched it this year. Yeah, I watch The Thing, like, honestly, about three times a year and have done every year since maybe, like, 2010. And then, you know, like, watched it as much as possible before. But, yeah, it's one of those. It's a pure good. It's a pure nihilistic good. Of that movie.
Well, Brian,
shit, I may need to check it out this week.
Is Sharp Objects your cool of the week for the fourth week in a row, Brian?
You know, I'm gonna mention it. I'm on episode four. Not quite as good as the first three. I'm getting to that place where I need a little bit more explanation on the characters of what's going on. It's still good. Still good. Definitely still recommend it. And also watching Castle Rock is still good.
How many episodes is Sharp Objects?
I think this weekend, the fifth episode will air. So four right now.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, if you start getting halfway through the season and you're not answering any questions yet,
but the performances though.
Yeah.
Keep you in it.
It's going to be one of those that I'm going to watch and I'm going to be mad at, but I'll probably watch it anyway. Who the fuck is this guy?
It's a weird one because when episode 3 finished, both myself and my wife are watching it at the moment, and I looked at it and I was like, that's just a really, really powerful episode. And then about 10 minutes later, I was like, did we actually find out anything about the killings? And she was like, not really. And I was like, it's like 50 minutes of, I mean, I love the character development. I really, really, I'm in love with that. But yeah, I kind of feel like it's because I think it's only episodes in total, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it must be a very busy back end. I've never read the book, so I don't know. I don't know what the book's like, how close it's sticking to. I don't even know how it's performing in terms of viewership. I would hope it's doing quite well because, you know, it's HBO, but everything else about it I love, so.
Well, I constantly hear people talking about it, so
it'd be pretty good. If the last three episodes are packed with, now you're finding out all this shit, it might be really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Brian, is your cool the Castle Rock then?
Yeah, because I won't spoil anything. Episode 4 ended with the character I expect to kind of go off the deep end, but not how he did. It was kind of like, whoa.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And so definitely Castle Rock, Sharp Objects, my cool of the week. Recommend both shows.
Nice. I got to watch them both, man. I haven't started anything. My cool of the week is I rewatched Avengers Infinity War. My sister-in-law came over to help out with Rose while she was recovering from the hospital, and she's never seen a single superhero movie, none of the Marvel shit, period. How do you avoid that?
Picked a good one to start with, though. That's my favorite, I think, of all the Marvel films.
Yeah, but if you start watching it from new eyes, it's really a big culmination of the past 10 years worth of movies, you know? And I don't know if she just wasn't getting it or what, but she, I'm not joking, got up in the middle of it and started doing laundry and shit.
How can you do that during Infinity War?
I don't know, man. I've still to see Infinity Wars. I sadly, I'm not the biggest comic book fan. I didn't grow up with any comic books. So the movies, I'll get all the terminology wrong, and this is where I show how much of a Luddite I am. I think out of all of them, the ones that I enjoy are the ones that are least like the main movies. So I'm a big fan of Guardians of the Galaxy. Love those two movies. Really liked Ant-Man because Ant-Man was just like a crime caper, so I kind of dug that one.
Yeah,
but I'm not a big fan of the Captain America movies. Although I did quite like Ragnarok. I thought Thor Ragnarok was alright. Don't really like Iron Man. Sorry,
you didn't like the original Iron Man.
I thought it was, you know, the one I liked was the one that everyone hated. I really liked that Shane Black third one, because it was kind of fun, and the dialogue was really well written, and it was Shane Black dialogue. So, I tend to be the one that, I don't know, it's weird to describe. So I've been purposely trying to watch them all because my wife went to see Infinity Wars, and she's done nothing but rave about it. She does like the movies. Yeah. And like that, I cannot sit down and watch this movie until I've watched everything in between. Or until I also saw the new Spider-Man movie and really liked that. But not for Spider-Man, because I really liked The Vulture. I thought he was, Michael Keaton's a brilliant actor. So I kind of dug that side of things. So yeah, I think I'm about two away from being able to watch Infinity War. I think I've still to watch. I watched Civil War and didn't realize that was two parts.
So I think I've still got the second part of that to watch. And what's the other one? I've never seen Age of Ultron yet either. So once I've watched those two...
You're not missing much, in my opinion.
That's what everyone keeps telling me. But everyone's like that, yeah, you can just skip that. But the completest of me is like, no, you need to know everything before you go into Infinity War. So
yeah, it's nice to watch, but it's kind of forgettable.
So yeah, that's my stat. If it makes you feel any better, I'm not much of a DC fan either, in fairness, and I've missed most of the kind of the. I obviously went through Nolan's movies, his Dark Knight trilogy, but I saw the new Superman movie and thought half of it was okay. Haven't seen Batman v Superman, haven't seen Wonder Woman, haven't seen the Justice League. Probably won't go and see Aquaman. If it appears on Netflix, there is a chance I will check it out.
Yeah.
But they're not the sort of movies I typically rush out to check. And there's nothing against them. They're huge movies and there's a lot of people like them. I find my mind kind of drifting off because it's weird. When it's done in horror movies, I'm cool with formulas. You know, absolutely 100%. Like, let's stick to the formula of the final girl. Totally happy with that. Seeing almost any other genre, though, I get bored. I find my attention kind of starting to drift. And there's a whole lot of those movies that kind of, it's like, oh, it's the end of the world. Oh, I wonder if my superhero's going to... Nope, he's fine. you know what I mean? It's that sort of thing. I don't know. And it's nothing against them if you're into those sort of movies. I think if I was a comic book fan, this is probably the best time ever to be a comic book fan.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The amount of money and technology and film, you know, the way they film these movies now, is just like candy to the eyes. But if you're not, it just means that there's about four or five movies that everyone talks about every single year that you just don't know anything about.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I was going to say, because I don't know how you've gotten away from spoilers for Infinity War, but it doesn't exactly follow the formula.
Yeah, I won't spoil anything on here, but I know what happens. I'm also like fairly sure that a lot of that's... See, I'm too cynical on them. I hate myself for that. I really hate myself right now. Like, genuinely hate myself about these movies, because any other genre I'd be fine with it. But I know for a fact that all the emotional payoff that they've done in that movie, most of it will be undone in the next movie.
Absolutely. When they...
Well, yeah.
That's just sinking me.
If it's not, like, I'm going to die inside.
Yeah, they're like, it's so powerful because they do this to this character and this to this character, which, right. Yeah, if that stayed through the next movie, I would totally agree. But if they're just going to reverse some of that, then I'm like, you know, I'm just like, you're using it as a tool to manipulate fans. But then again, they do the same with horror movies. How many times have we heard the final chapter? And we're like, oh, wow, this is the last one.
It's called storytelling, ladies and gentlemen, and it has existed for millennia.
That's how you do it. That's how you do it. It's clever marketing and good storytelling. So
I'm excited about it. But yeah, if they all really die, I'm going to be pissed.
So is that your only cool of the week, Phil?
Yeah, man, that's it. That's about all I've seen this week.
Well, I've started watching a show again that it's in its third season, and it's been out... I think it started again back at the end of June, but I'm just now starting to watch. Any of you guys watch Preacher?
Oh, no, I've seen the first two seasons. I've not seen season three yet. Love it.
I don't know how the fuck they get away with this shit. They were.
I gotta get back in it.
Yeah, people that read the comics were like, "Oh, fuck it, it's not coming on HBO. They're not going to be able to get away with it." They're getting away with it. I mean, you've got Tulip going out and talking face to face with God, telling him she's about to kick his ass. You've got the son, the son of Jesus and Mary Magdalene is like retarded and pisses all over everybody. It's just it's so fucked up, but it's a great show and it really makes you think because you know, you've got different characters and it may be God, it may not be God, there may be spirituality, it might just be people bullshitting you, but all the characters are really great. How far are you into it, Duncan?
So I've seen as far as the first two seasons, and season three has started up. It's one of the few shows where well, it's becoming more common now that it kind of follows the American release. So it's on Amazon Prime in the UK, and the episodes drop weekly. So, but we haven't, because we're still, we're juggling about four or five shows at the moment. What we'll tend to do with Preacher is we wait for it to finish and then kind of binge watch through it, like in a week. Because it's one of those, it's a very bingeable show. Because every episode, I love the style of that, and I'm with you on that. I never read the comics. Baz on my show is a massive Preacher fan, like absolutely loves it. He read all the comic books. He's really into it. But there's a darkness in that show that I'm very much like yourself, Lance, that when I watch, I'm like, I don't know who's financing this, and I don't know how this has managed to go so long. I know this is the final season, but what they've done, like what they've got away with putting this on like a VOD over here and stuff, is it's kind of amazing. Like genuinely, like I don't think this would have existed for as long had it been on a network. I just don't think, you know, they would have been able to. I think they maybe would have had to make some concessions and tone it down. But yeah, it's brilliant, brilliantly casted. The stories are, it's a combination of what the fuck and just right out, you know, kind of goofiness. Like, there's a really goofy sense of humor about it and a really dark, mean spirited streak that runs through that show as well.
All at the same time.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's unlike anything else. Brian, you've started it, right?
Preacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only seen the first season.
Okay. Yeah, it gets better. They get to New Orleans in the second season.
Oh.
And they actually find God. Or do they?
In New Orleans?
Yeah. In a dog costume and leather.
I don't know about all that.
Have you checked it out, Phil?
No, man. I watched like most of the way through the first season, and I don't know. I just kind of stopped watching it. Not really. I just had too much other shit going on, and I never got back to it.
Understood.
But, I really need to, because I did like it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely my cool of the week. Brian, we got any headlines this time, man?
The upcoming season, the apocalypse season.
Right.
Which makes sense if it's the, you know, Murder House Coven crossover.
Yeah.
She played a couple big characters, or at least one from each, you know, season, so that's pretty big. And also with that news came that American Horror Story is renewed for season 9 and 10.
What a really? Shocker.
Well, it's their moneymaker. Yeah.
And the only other thing that I got on here, because I didn't want to rehash anything we've already talked about, is Rebecca Ferguson has been cast in Mike Flanagan's Dr. Sleep movie.
Oh.
And if people aren't familiar with Rebecca Ferguson, she was just recently in the Mission Impossible movies.
Oh, okay.
So, Duncan, have you read the Dr. Sleep book?
I have not. I've got a... anyone that listens to my show knows that. I used to be a huge Stephen King fan when I was like a kid. I got a massive bag full of books at about 1994... 94, and started like binge reading. I'd come right off like reading tons of sci-fi stuff. I was a big reader as a kid, like from like a young age, just loads of books. And moved into Stephen King up until I was about 16, and then kind of jumped over to Clive Barker, which, you know, makes sense because like, you know, adolescent sexuality, Clive Barker, obviously. He swung into that, and I tried to get back into King a couple of times, but he was in that kind of rough patch where he was writing books like The Cell, which is, I've never seen the movie, but the book was pretty bad. So I kind of like stemmed off it, and then I heard he had done it, and I was quite excited to check it out, and for whatever reason I've just slept on it, no pun intended. I will get around to it for sure, because I want to read it before the movie comes out. I'm interested to see how it's going to fit, because, is it going to be in relation to the world that Kubrick built, or is it going to be in relation to the world that King's built? Because, you know, Kubrick's book does not finish the same way at all.
No, that,
as, yeah. yeah, well, as
that that particular character that didn't make it through Kubrick's, he's actually a pretty big part of the first couple of chapters of the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if they follow the book exactly, it's going to obviously follow King's vision, which I think he went way out of his way to make sure that particular character was in the new book.
Yeah, I believe Ewan McGregor has said that it's going to be more faithful to the book. I think he came out recently and said that.
I'm all for that.
We got some.
Yeah,
time.
It's not a bad book.
Yeah, you got some time. The movie is scheduled for a January 24th, 2020 release.
January? Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
2020, though.
It's a ways away.
Yeah.
January, historically, is the graveyard for horror movies. It's where you dump the movies you're not confident in, which is weird considering Stephen King at the moment is hot shit. I mean, at this moment, I mean, there are very few movies that have me as excited as the upcoming Pet Sematary remake. I think every bit of news I hear about that just literally makes me like giddy like a schoolgirl. I think the casting seems.
I was wondering how you were going to finish that sentence.
I was trying to think about how I was going to do it as well. All the casting news for that has been phenomenal. That I think they picked the best two directors they could have to do that. And it's a movie which I'm not as precious about for a Stephen King remake, you know what I mean, in terms of what they're going to do with it. I think it's a great idea. So yeah, between that, there's, you know, about five or six other titles in the works, the stuff that's happening on TV, whether it's, you know, the adaptations for Castle Rock, the fact that even stuff like Mr. Mercedes is in a season two just now, and even though I can't get it in the UK, I hear nothing but great things about it.
Mr. Mercedes?
It's on some channel that doesn't exist in the UK.
DirecTV. I have it here. You've read the books, then, I take it.
Yes. Yeah.
Duncan, the first season, if you're a purist, I had multiple orgasms as a book purist because I think it was 10 episodes. It followed the book almost exactly to the T. They almost didn't. They didn't vary from the book at all. It was like a perfect recreation of the first book, Duncan.
Oh, that makes me a happy man. Like, they had me like in for life when they mentioned Brendan Gleeson was in it, because I think Brendan Gleeson's
perfect. He's perfect.
One of the best actors around. So I couldn't wait to check it out. But yeah, it's not showing. I think realistically, I probably can buy it, or I could at least import it. But because it plays whatever the station is, it plays in the States. I don't think the rights have been acquired to distribute in the UK yet. Which is not uncommon. There's quite a few shows that do that, and then eventually an Amazon will pick it up, maybe a year, 2 years down the line, or a Netflix or something in the UK will pick these things up. But yeah, it does kind of crush me, because it's one of the more modern King books I have read that I really enjoyed. Then the casting news, and then I heard it got renewed for a second season, so the excitement levels are high. But it's almost as it's a weird one. I think they'll sort it out for sure over here. But yeah, with that, you would just expect, with it being Stephen King, with it being, you know, even Ewan McGregor being in that movie is a big pull. And then the fact it's the sequel to maybe arguably one of the more famous King works, January is a weird date to release that. So I would not be surprised if that gets moved.
I mean, it worked. Well,
setting
okay
it a
for,
year
Split.
And a half away. Oh yeah,
Split did well. It came out in January, and I think that's why they're doing Glass in January.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it remains to be seen, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I wouldn't be too surprised if they changed the date. Well, then again, it is a Pet Cemetery, and January is sort of a cemetery, right?
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye. Moving on.
On that note, that's all the news. Slow news week.
All right. Well, listen, Duncan, I was... did you see my picture? Can you see my picture with Freddy Krueger from on the Skype there?
I can indeed. It's cool as fuck.
Yeah, that was at a comic or a horror and comic convention that took place concurrently with a progressive rock music festival that was actually Snowdonia, Wales, is where that picture was taken.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I've done the UK travel. I did London, and then I went up to Edinburgh, and then, of course, Snowdonia.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I saw some trailer parks somewhere up there. You guys do have trailer parks, right, Duncan?
Yeah, they're kind of less American style than a bit more kind of in the UK. They're kind of classed as caravan parks.
Okay.
Yeah,
like Brad Pitt in Snatch.
Yes, it's a caravan for my ma.
So, all right. Well, then, in that case, let's take a little trip.
We're going to talk about Blood Clots, a new horror anthology starring Brooke Smith, Evan Arnold, and Kristen Slazeman. What did you guys think about Blood Clots?
I love an anthology. It definitely looked low budget. That's for sure. Who's releasing this? Do you know?
Not really sure. This kind of just dropped here a few days ago, actually.
Okay.
And it's actually available now on VOD, from what I'm reading. So.
Really?
Well, I tried to look it up on IMDb, and the only thing that came up was something called "She Whose Blood Is Clotting in My Underwear." I don't think that's it.
Yeah. What? I guess
that's
a totally
band name
different
I've ever heard.
Movie.
Duncan, what did you think about the? Did you get a chance to check it out?
I did. Yeah. I'll not be rushing to check it out, but I do like in October every year, like when people are doing their, you know, kind of 31 of October every year. What I do is I put it with movies that have come out in the year that I do it. It's a good way of making sure that I you know, rimmed off a lot of titles for the end of the year when I make my top 20 list. So if it is available on Amazon in October, it might make the list. Just as a way to fill it. I thought it looked interesting. And that's
right?
The kind of
I thought it looked interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. Sometimes these things, they don't come across great in trailers, and they kind of look cheap and a wee bit nasty, and then you watch them and you realise that they're just a ton of fun, and that gets you through. You can overlook some of the other stuff because, you know, everyone's having a blast and you're having a blast watching it, and sometimes that doesn't always come through well in a trailer. The trailer was a bit, literally, honestly, when it finished, I was like, not too sure if I'll be rushing to check that out. But yeah, I like the anthology format. Even if all I get out of an anthology is one good short, it's worth watching for that.
Yeah, because even if you don't like it, you know, wait 5 minutes and you'll see the next one.
Mm-hmm.
You just gotta stick it out.
Well, Brian, you're excited about it, right?
Not as much as you probably thought I was gonna be. I am curious about this kill scene that they're advertising in the trailer.
Right.
One of the best kill scenes. Yeah. So I that probably caught my interest more than the trailer.
Probably. Well, probably someone who overdoses on opioids or something. It's like this big buildup, and then somebody eats a lot of pills and falls asleep. Scene over.
They always put that shit in the trailers, and you know it's not gonna be as advertised, but
never.
You're still gonna go watch it and be mad about it, but you still paid money for it.
So Blood Clots, available now on VOD. And our final trailer we're gonna talk about is Puppet Master: The Littlest Rite.
Now you're talking my language.
Is that a midget joke?
Starring Thomas Lennon, Udo Kier, and Barbara Crampton, directed by Sonny Laguna and Tommy Wicklund. What did you guys think?
Duncan?
Well, I'm in the enviable position that I've seen it. So, I got a screener 2 weeks ago, and I've got an episode covering it coming out, and I'm under embargo to talk about it officially, like in a review sense. I will tell you that I think it's probably the best Puppet Master movie by a country mile, and it's the fun. It's the most fun I've had watching a movie this year. I think
it looks like fun.
I love
brilliant
Puppet Master movies.
It's written by, this movie's written by Craig R. Zahla, the guy who did Bone Tomahawk and Brawl in Cell 99. He's the guy that wrote it, so the dialogue is great. The practical effects are brilliant, and it's just fun. It's like a really... It's a full moon movie. It's Charles Band movie, but just if he was starting his company right now, but had all the same kind of ethos and work ethic of the stuff he was putting out in the 80s, that's what it's like. You're going to love it. I can't imagine. I'm still too, like, from all the reviews that I've read of people that have seen it, I'm still to find one that didn't like it. But I challenge any kind of horror fan worth his salt that grew up, you know, watching 80s horror that will not have a ball with this movie. It's a ton of fun.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. What's the release date, Brian?
VOD August 17th.
Excellent.
Philip, well, that was yeah, man, I am now. I was kind of excited for it after watching the trailer. I'm not a huge Puppet Master fan. I don't know that I've seen all the movies. If I did, I've forgotten 90% of it. But yeah, man, this one, it looks like it's fun. I'm digging it. I'll definitely watch this one.
Cool.
All right.
I think we're all on board.
Yep, Puppet Master. Everybody look for it on VOD August 17th.
Any more trailers?
Nope. That is our final trailer.
In that case, Philip, we should have a little backlog on the feedback, I think, since we didn't cover it last week.
Yeah, we got a little bit doubled up listener feedback.
You may open that thing up and see a one-star review one day. Anything's possible, so...
Let me add that motherfucker. So he says, so Doninelli, he says, this is one of the better podcasts in the style. The three hosts are hilarious and have developed such a great chemistry together that their segments are a blast to listen to as they talk and joke about recent watches, just released trailers, and more. The mix of films covered in the show, from big releases and an older film of the same style, or more recent mainstream pop culture smashes, is fun, and the conversation is lively, fun, and laid back, like a group of friends discussing films with a few beers, mostly because that's what we do. An enjoyable and highly worthwhile show to check out. Wow.
Wow, and that's from Don at the Horror Mafia, right?
Yeah, man. Shout out to the Horror Mafia. We've been on them, been on their show a couple of times. I think they've guessed it on ours a couple of times. It's been a lot of fun.
Duncan, that's the nicest man in horror podcasting. Don, there. You're familiar with the Horror Mafia, right?
Yeah, Don. I do a kind of a listener movie club thing once a month, and Don has submitted a review every single month for the past, the full time it's been running, which is almost a year. He always submits a review. He always posts our show when we drop it. He always leaves feedback, comments, gets involved with it. He's genuinely one of the nicest people I have met through horror podcasting. He's a pure good. If a pure good could be a human being, that's Don Anelli.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'll agree with you.
Yep, Don, send me your information. I got a box of Jason Voorhees Funko cereal for you.
He may not want that.
Are they in little Jeeps?
It may be nasty.
No Jeeps.
Yeah, Brian, I've got his address. I'll get it to you, man.
All right, cool.
Let's see. And we've got B. Germaine.
Jermaine.
Fucking fuck, man.
We all fucked up his name, man.
Goddamn Australian. Watching Mandy. Just about to watch my most anticipated film of the Melbourne International Film Festival. I can't contain my excitement right now. I need my cage rage fix. Be jealous. Regarding the upcoming Joker movie... Thomas Mariani says, "You were never really here," which is what this still is from. I guess it's the still that we showed on Facebook. Feels like it's a one ending change away from becoming a Joker origin movie already. Hopefully they actually take the risk of going similarly brutal. I think that they might. I'm excited about it. And then Marietta Rushing says, "This is not good for little old ladies."
Was she talking about the Joker announcement or what?
I guess. I don't know.
Whatever works. Whatever floats your boat.
Is there something going on in that movie that I don't know about?
Man.
They're just going to drop dead.
Oh, my God.
It's the Village of the Damned. Stephen Loblad says, holy shit, a positive remark by Lance on The Walking Dead.
I have plenty of positive Walking Dead remarks.
He says, I'm excited for the new season as well. The trailer was awesome.
Yes, it was. Duncan, you watch Walking Dead at all?
I tapped out. I tapped out about. The thing is, I stuck with that show a lot longer than I expected to. I tapped out just after. I mean, I suppose we could do spoilers for a year and a half ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're the full last season talk. So,
oh, that's cool. We went as soon as they killed Glenn. And I'm not saying I was the biggest Glenn fan, and that was like, you have crossed a line. When they kill Glenn, and then the following episode, it just kind of went back to, quite a lot of the character development stuff that we're doing, week in, week out sort of thing. I said, I'm going to give this a couple of weeks, and if I feel the urge to go back to it, I will, and I haven't. The thing about The Walking Dead is, every trailer they put out for a new season always has me like sitting there going, oh, I need to watch this. And I don't have the time now. I'm so fussy with what I watch now. But I'm glad I mean, obviously there's going to be big changes this season. I think it's a shorter season as well, I'd heard. Is that right?
I hadn't heard that.
Well, I'm not mad at it. At least they'll get some shit done.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, without The Walking Dead, the majority of what I watch on TV, horror-wise, would not exist. That show literally has paved the way for like everything. So
that's true.
Regardless of a watch or not, you got to respect the fact that it's what season 8 or 9 it's on, which is incredible for a horror show. There ain't many that can do that.
No doubt.
Well, he's excited for the new season as well, and he says the trailer was awesome. I kind of am too. I don't know. Low expectations. Hopefully I'll be surprised. Regarding the new Sabrina show for Netflix, Mike Batchelor says it's got potential. Sabrina, like the teenage witch?
Yep.
Yes, sir. Okay. They are doing a darker take, I believe, for the new Netflix series.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll check it out. Darren Wilson says, since you guys often talk about the declining of MoviePass. Oh, this should be fun. don't know if you've heard the rumors. A source familiar with the matter told Business Insider that during an all-hands meeting on Monday, MoviePass CEO Mitch Lowe said the app would not make Christopher Robin and The Meg, the two major releases hitting theaters in the next 2 weeks, available to its subscribers. He implied that the practice of not offering tickets to major movies would continue for the foreseeable future. Ooh, I was hoping that was going in a different direction.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I canceled mine too, man.
I think everyone has, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like...
I have mine through... it's paid through October 17th, and if they don't make some big changes, that's going to be it.
I think they've made enough big changes. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in the positive direction.
No, they're not. They can't. It's not sustainable.
Right.
It was a not sustainable business model to begin with.
Go and explain to me what, like, because I hear a lot of Americans talk about it, and I don't know what it is. What's MoviePass?
It's you pay $10 a month, and they let you go see a movie every day. Just you pick a movie, you go see it, they pay for it.
All right.
Yeah. $10
a
month.
Deal. It was a great deal ticket for several months.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, a ticket to a movie cost $10. They could have charged $30 a month easy.
Yeah, they used to charge $40, and then this new guy bought it and charged $10, and he thought that all the theaters were going to butter it up and like support him because they were going to be so happy to have more butts in seats. Duncan and that, of course, we all know they make their money at the concessions.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, quite frankly, he did a lot of good. Or these folks did a lot of good for the theaters because theater going was up 10% this year, and you know a lot of those people are bringing people with them that aren't on the plan.
Yeah,
you know a lot of them are buying popcorn and sodas and everything. So
yep.
They got a raw deal because the theaters didn't play ball, but now the theaters are doing their own thing. Like AMC has one now for $20, where you can see three movies a week, but it has to be in an AMC theater.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to have that front runner, but unfortunately the front runner got screwed on this one.
Yeah. Well, Adam Bunch says all mission showings are blocked.
Yes.
Which is a problem you had, Brian,
so,
right?
So is Christopher yeah. Robin.
Yeah,
and the Meg.
And the Meg.
You're fucking kidding me. Are you serious? Yeah.
And the Meg.
From what I hear, this is just they've only said Christopher Robinson and the Meg in the upcoming weeks. But from what I understand, this is going to be every week. Whatever major release yeah. is going to be well, out that weekend.
In other words, everything we see for the podcast.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You're not gonna be able to see a first run show on opening weekend.
It was good while it lasted.
And I believe it will go from $9.95 to $14.95 here.
Oh, and they're upping the price. That yes. sounds great. Yeah.
Lowering the film selection and upping the price is not a good business formula.
Yeah, no, that's not going to work out well. Under reasons that you quit, I just put, I think it's pretty obvious. Ryan Stevens says, yeah, it was nice while it lasted, but I'm also done. I did get more than enough value out of the $80 I paid. Time to switch to AMC's program. Yeah, look, I enjoyed the wave while it was there.
Yep, me too. Got my money's worth for sure. Yeah. No complaints.
Let's see. Bede, I'm not, our buddy Bede. Says, oh man, Munchie. I used to watch that film Munchie. As a kid.
Have you Munchie. Seen that one, Duncan? Or does that ring a bell, Munchie?
The name rings a bell, but I can't picture it. I'm going to Google the front cover, and I bet you.
Yeah, you'll recognize it, I'm sure.
I know I've never seen that one. I'd totally watch it, though. It sounds
Was
awesome.
Was it Michael J. Fox in that, or am I what? Totally like tripping? I think maybe I have a false memory. Mandela effect memory or something.
Yeah, you might have just made your own casting on that one. I don't think he was in that one.
Because of Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah, I've totally seen that movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have.
Oh, yeah, it's Wynorski, that's why.
All right.
It's Jim Wynorski, yeah.
Yeah, it's getting a Blu-ray release, so.
That's getting a Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
There you Amazing. Go.
I believe
it's Jennifer
gonna...
Love Hewitt in it.
Yeah, I believe what? It's going to be a double Blu-ray. Super, I think the sequel, you get young. The sequel with it.
Oh.
There's a sequel?
That's not a bad deal.
Artie Johnson was in it, and Dom DeLuise. This is a big, big release.
Dom DeLuise.
can we do a remake?
That's funny.
Oh, no. I got a great idea, guys. Michael J. Fox in the remake. Yes? No?
I don't know if he's acting anymore, man.
I don't think he's available.
It got really quiet too soon.
It was like, ah.
Yeah, Blu-ray release from Shout Factory, Munchies and Munchie. This was the sequel.
Okay.
So basically a lot of pot smokers are making movies. Okay.
Well, ain't that the way it works?
I guess so, yeah.
Ryan Stevens says, I'm watching Ghost Stories from 2017 today. About 30 minutes in, and it's very good so far.
Nice.
Stories?
That's the anthology one, right?
Yeah, yep. With Martin Freeman, I believe.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Okay.
No doubt. How have I not heard of this?
We reviewed the trailer.
I don't fucking remember it.
It's good. I really liked it. I know yeah. there's a lot of people that are not on board with the end of the movie, but to me it very much reminded me of like an Amicus anthology, which is what it's playing to. It's British. It was a play first, and the guy who wrote the play adapted it for the movie, and I think it stays pretty close to that. And it's about a kind of a paranormal skeptic who is challenged to solve three cases, each more insidious than the one before. I thought it was. I don't think it was the greatest horror movie of all time. Like I think some of the trailers kind of put it to be, or the poster. But it's totally different. It harks back to an older style of kind of anthologies in the UK, which I kind of dig.
So we posted a picture of the koozies and the T-shirts that arrived last week. Megan Gomez says, "Need me one?" Well, for Ivan and I, where can we get them? We don't have a store, huh? Where do we get them, Lance?
Leave an iTunes review.
Leave an iTunes review. We need a store.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool t-shirts, man.
We'll worry about that later. We're not as big as Podcast Under the Stairs yet, so maybe one day.
Yeah, we'll get there. Well, shit, leave an iTunes review. Hook us up, we'll hook you up. We're going to need a lot more t-shirts. Patrick Lear says, "Damn, I might need to upgrade my t-shirt." Lars Christian Detlefsen from Denmark.
Yes.
Says
our man Lars.
Says very cool. Need, want, must have.
Yeah, I'm gonna send him a koozie for sure.
Yeah. Well damn dude, maybe we should set up a little online store. How bad can that be?
We'll play it by ear.
Yeah. Regarding Trick or Treat, the Blu-ray. Darren Wilson.
Hey Duncan, have you seen that Trick or Treat? The one I can't remember who directed it, but he's coming out with a new Godzilla movie.
Oh yeah, Michael Dougherty.
Yes, yeah, the original Trick or Treat. Did you like that one?
I love that movie, and I saw Scream Factory's putting out. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yes, I will be buying that. So.
That's a cool company. I like what Scream Factory has done. Darren Wilson says he already pre-ordered this one. It's rad as fuck on its own anyway, but
that's Darren for you, right Duncan?
Yeah. Yep. They're like rad. He is rad to the bone. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, I was sure. Thinking that. I really love that rad as fuck. I'm using that from now on. But he said he can't pass up his stuff from the hometown director. Patrick Lear says, not the Trick or Treat movie I was looking for.
He's thinking of the heavy metal one.
Oh, okay. Stephen Loblad posted, Castle Rock is good. Pennywise is creepy as fuck. My bet is he's Satan or something like that. I'm listening to you guys right now, and what if he is Pennywise in disguise? Huh?
Steven, get with the program, dude. Ryan,
what happens? What if he is?
I mean, he's definitely...
We are.
He is definitely something. He is some kind of evil.
Yeah.
That we don't have enough on his backstory, but if he turns out to actually be Pennywise, I mean, this is in Stephen King's universe.
Yeah.
My mind will explode.
The alien comes and, like, inhabits his body. Kevin Nez, of course, says, hella good. regarding Motel Hell, you guys are smoking. This classic is horror gold, 9 out of 10.
Horror gold.
Was that Nez also?
Yes, it was.
I think he's digging for gold in his nostrils on this one.
That's got to be a Nez thing. If it was anybody else, I'd be like, what?
Sucked. Did you like that movie, Duncan?
It does not hold up. No. I have fond memories of it from back in the VHS days, but that movie, like, I love movies being put on Blu-ray because you get to, you know, a new transfer, you get to put them as part of your collection, all the rest. But sometimes it forces you to rewatch things, and nostalgia is a motherfucker. Because when you sit back and watch them through, you're like, this is not how I remember this movie going. So.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
It was all kinds of crazy.
didn't we get photoshopped into the movie? Somebody sent that picture.
That was
what?
All right.
That's awesome.
That was a cool picture.
Yeah, Philip, you look extra happy to become some sausage.
Well, ouch. You got to take life as it gives it to you. thanks for the picture. I didn't see it. I'm about to go look at it.
I'm gonna send it to you.
All right.
Yeah, hey, Duncan, that's Darren again. He's our number one guy, man. This dude is so fucking cool, isn't he?
I genuinely don't know how he has the time to do the amount of photoshopping that he does, because I've been photoshopped on everything. For almost every show that I've ever been on, there's a photoshop of me somewhere out there, and some of them are safe for work. Most yes. of them are not safe for work. My head's been put on places that I don't know if I'm comfortable with it, but he's done it anyway. Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Darren. I think he's kind of, once again, we're in a great time just now where there's a phenomenal kind of fraternity of horror podcasters, and some of the newer ones that have come up are just, but that photograph is amazing. That one that you just sent, Brian, is phenomenal. He's such a cool dude, and his show's brilliant as well. The Psychosemantic podcast is well worth your time. I've been on it a few times.
I've heard you. That's a great podcast, man. We don't get political. We made a conscious decision not to get political on this one, but nothing's forbidden on that one.
Yeah.
Well, that made my fucking day. That was awesome. That's it for listener feedback this week. Thanks to everybody who reaches out to us. We love your feedback and ideas. You can always reach us at thehorrorreturns@gmail.com. That's probably the simplest, easiest way to get there. Or you can check us out on any of the other social medias. Join our Facebook group. It's obviously a lot of fun. They just sent me the Photoshop picture, and it's great. And don't forget, we're still running the contest. So be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and we'll send you, what is it, a shirt or a koozie or both? Mm-hmm. I'm fixing to get on iTunes. Can I leave myself a review? Do I count?
Yeah, of course.
They're cool-ass shirts, man. Go check them out.
Village of the Damned, Raw Meat, a.k.a. Deathline, and also Kill List. So we'll start with a 1960 movie, Village of the Damned. A little bit of trivia is directed by Wolf Rilla, also known for Roadhouse Girl. And he directed apparently an X-rated film called Secrets of a Door-to-Door Salesman.
What? That's weird.
Yeah, it looked pretty weird. Of course, you know, X-rated back then was a little different from X-rated. I mean, for crying out loud, Clockwork Orange was rated X when it first came out, you know?
Clockwork Orange was banned in the UK.
I wouldn't be too surprised if Door-to-Door Salesman was too, Duncan.
Yeah, they banned it from the UK when it played. In fact, Kubrick asked for it. Kubrick supported its banning in the UK because there were... Yeah, I think there was two violent rapes that happened in about a week after that movie came out in the UK. So they were toying with the idea, and Kubrick got behind it 100%. And it wasn't actually unbanned in the UK until after Kubrick died. So that would have been, what, 2000-ish? Wow. It remained on the banned list, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, the writers of this film were Sterling Siliphant, Wolf Rilla, and Ronald Kinnock. Little bit of trivia here. The blonde wigs the children wear had a built-in dome to give the impression they had a larger-than-normal cranium size.
Yeah, that makes sense.
More movie magic from 1960 here. The eerie effect of the children's glowing eyes was created by matting a negative image of their eyes over their pupils when they used their powers. And this was a weird one. The baby children were all played by Kim Clark Champness, who as an adult would become a very popular Canadian music journalist and television personality. Especially familiar as one of the original Much Music VJs in Canada.
Oh.
So, interesting. All right, Village of the Damned. Duncan, our guest, would you like to go first?
This is a movie I'd not seen in a while, like a long, long time. I'm more familiar with the Carpenter remake.
Yeah.
Which is one of my least favorite Carpenters. And Carpenter loves this movie. Like, has a, it's weird that of the remakes that Carpenter has done, he picked the movies that scarred him as a child. So when he did The Thing, he obviously talks about Came From Outer Space and how that, you know, upset him. And Village of the Damned, which is not what you would necessarily associate with Carpenter. Same idea, awful experience as a kid watching it. I mean, it plays out like a Twilight Zone episode, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And that was the vibe I got through it, particularly on this watch. It's weird. I misremembered how this movie finished. I had this more nihilistic approach of the kids, like, ended up, you know, kind of taking over and stuff. And then that's not how the movie finishes at all.
It was pretty nihilistic to the kids.
Well, yeah. Well, but then you have that weird thing where...
I thought that was a pretty big chance they took with that ending, actually.
Yeah, but then, like, at the end, their eyes all float off somewhere as if they're going to go somewhere else. And, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, but then they talk about how... Like, earlier on in the movie, they talk about how this has already happened several times before in other parts of the world. So I don't know if it's the same entities that are doing it each time, and each time they're getting slightly better and further along. I mean, one of the more kind of harrowing lines of the whole movie is when they talk about the previous, like, kind of failed attempts for this to happen, and they talk about specifically the Eskimo community, and it's very blasé. I mean, this film is of its time. This is like 60s UK, like 1960s UK, which means that things are very un-PC. Like, the husband slaps the wife in the face to calm her down, which is, you know, you just don't do that in movies.
She's hysterical too, that or a dildo.
Yeah. But it's like the way everyone talks, the way everyone acts is just, it's of an era, but it's painfully aged. But they talk about, like, how because the kids are blonde hair and pale skin.
And the parents have dark hair.
Yeah, and the Eskimo community, well, you know, they got rid of them. And I'm like, well, you know, that's, you know, a sweeping generalization that you would expect from a country which colonized half the world. You know what I mean? Like, just talk kind of narrow British-minded view on things. Yeah, I mean, I imagine when this movie came out, it terrified people. You know, absolutely had them shaking in their shoes. Had them look. To me, I love the idea of malicious kids. It's a trope that's been used, like, forever, and it should continue to be used forever. Anything that, like, because there is always that fear parents have of their kids replacing them or killing them. And, you know, it's a real psychological condition, and it plays into that, and it does it really, really well, even though, like I say, the movie itself is only an hour and 20 long, and even though they are trying to ramp up the pace in it quite a bit, it does drag a bit. There was certain bits where I was like, can we just get things moving? I mean, it's like, I think it's about half an hour in the movie before the babies arrive, and then they're kind of, you know, they can talk and walk and all the rest at about the 50-minute mark. And then we really only have half an hour to wrap this story up.
We're getting there. Come on, let's tell the story here, right?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, overall what you have is you have a movie where a town at first becomes, I want to say cursed, but there's a weird effect. Everyone's knocked out. Anyone that gets close to the town also is knocked out. When everyone wakes up, all the women are pregnant. They've all fallen pregnant at exactly the same time. They all give birth far too early to kids that grow up far too quick. And these kids all kind of look the same and appear to be able to communicate telepathically. And they may be otherworldly. And it plays out very much like a kind of early Twilight Zone episode. And probably, I think, in that format and with that time frame, it'd work a bit better. I think it's just a bit lengthy for what they're trying to do overall. Yeah.
Well, fair enough. I want to go next if you guys don't mind, because I have a quite different impression of it. This was a first watch for me, and I was fully expecting to just laugh my ass off at this. I thought it was going to be horrible. I thought it was going to be cheesy. In fact, there was even a Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of it that I thought about downloading. I fucking love this movie. I really did. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well paced from beginning to end. I didn't think there was a wasted moment in it. I love the 1 hour and 17 minute runtime.
Yeah.
I love the setup because I wasn't expecting it. I didn't know what to expect, guys. I thought this was going to start with a bunch of little, you know, creepy kids from the beginning of it. I liked the way they kind of built it up. And I thought they took some chances. There were a couple of really brutal scenes in here, I thought, for 1960, especially with, you know, putting children in harm's way and things like that. And I thought the ending was really creepy. And then they did kind of bring the Cold War into it a little bit. They talked about some of the kids that popped up in Russia and were building a bomb and stuff like that. This was not what I expected. I enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah, there's something kind of magical about those black and white movies from the early 60s. It's like you get this high definition black and white almost, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just got a really cool look to it. And it especially for this movie where there's these little, you know, blonde haired kids. I think it does it some justice. I like that it's in black and white. It gives it a little extra. As far as the story goes, you know, they got pregnant, and I'm trying to figure out what the hell's going on the whole time, because everybody gets knocked out, and then they wake up and they're all pregnant, and I'm thinking, you know, have you ever had that fantasy when you're like 16 or so that you could like freeze time and fuck all the bitches you wanted to?
That's what happened.
That's what I was like. That's it. I got it figured out. There's some fucking weird mad scientist that couldn't get laid in high school, and he wrote hitting all that whole fucking town. And then,
oh my god!
And then the babies start growing up a little extra fast, and right. And I was like, okay, definitely aliens, and they got all this hive mind and killing people with their psychic power shit going on. I thought it was kind of cool, man, for a 1960 movie. It's a little dated, obviously, because it's from 1960, but I mean, you're coming off of not too far removed from World War II, where these were, you know, the Germans wanted this blonde haired, blue eyed race, right? And now you've got these blonde haired, blue eyed, creepy looking, dumb and dumber haircut kids. And and you got to be worried about them, man. They're going to take shit over. I like the way that they ended it. I thought it was cool that they went extraterrestrial with it and a little more sci-fi. I always love those. I was pleasantly surprised, man. I liked it.
Yeah, I'm with there with you guys. I really enjoyed this. I haven't seen it in a while. I've probably seen the remake a little bit more.
Yeah.
Which I think that's probably why I like this one a little bit more, because the character of, what was his name? David, the main kid. Mm-hmm. Very different in the remake, how his character played out. Yeah. So I think the way his character played out in the original kind of drew me more to the story. And overall, I had a lot of fun watching this one. I was into it from when the phenomenon happened and they were trying to get people to cross into the, I guess they had it marked off where the line was. It would, you know, the guy went in there with his gas mask and he was still affected by what was going on.
Cool. I like and that. The dumbass sent the plane in. He's like, yeah. Get low. But when you feel weird, pull up.
Yes, that was going to go bad immediately.
Fucking suicide bombers, what you just sent in.
But you know, I don't think I could say anything more than what you said, Lance. I had a great time watching this, rewatching it actually, a lot more than I thought I was going to.
All right, cool. You guys ready for scores?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Duncan. We go score 1 to 10, and you can do 0.25, 0.5, you know, whatever is most specific to what you would consider this film.
I would give this one probably 6.5 out of 10.
That's pretty good. So it's 2/3 good.
Yeah. Like I say, I think
that's strong.
The issues that I have with it are more in terms of how it's aged and how it's dated. And like I say, I've seen it a few times, and coming back to it this time, I felt there was maybe a bit more dead air than maybe you guys thought there was. So, but yeah, it's not like, I mean, it's a well acted, well, you know, well written and unique concept movie. And you're very, like, as Phil was saying, I totally agree. It very much plays into post World War II Aryan sort of ideas of this is what we avoided. But look, the you know, and also plays into that kind of Twilight Zone thing as well. It's weird to think that this movie and Psycho came out in the same year, though.
Oh, I know, yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? And Peeping Tom came out the same year. In the same country. Couldn't, this one harks to a more innocent, even though like the story itself is a bit malicious, it's still that kind of hangover from kind of the 50s sci-fi stuff. Whereas, you know, in this year as well, you've got things that are moving so far in the other direction in the same year. It's weird. It's weirdly placed. But yeah, it's still like everyone should see it.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. Yeah, that's a good juxtaposition between those two films, and to think they came out the same year. Mm-hmm. Right on, man. Yeah, I'm going 8. I really enjoyed this more than I thought I would, and it was it was a very fun Twilight Zone episode that was a little longer than normal. 8 for me.
Yeah, I'll give it, just because the runtime was so short, I'm going to give it a 7.5. I think it did have some dead air, like you were saying, but because the movie's so short, it's it feels longer than it is. It really does. But if it was any longer, it would really feel shitty.
Oh, it would suck.
Yeah. So I like what they did with it. Yeah, and you're right. The Twilight Zone episode thing captured it right on. It's no Psycho by a mile, but still a classic. And yeah, you should probably watch it. I've only seen the remake.
And it's no Night of the Living Dead, is it?
Yeah. See, the Night of the Living Dead didn't hold up too much for me.
Oh, that's right. You didn't like it.
Yeah, I just made fun of it a lot.
Right, fair enough. Brian?
I'm going to go 7.5 also. Well acted. Nice. Story. I was involved in the story, and definitely, for me, better than the remake.
All right, cool. So basically, we're all saying check it out if you haven't already, and I can't believe I hadn't before.
Yeah, it's known as Deathland in the UK.
Okay, we'll call it Deathline then. Director Gary Sherman, also known for Poltergeist 3 and the Rutger Hauer classic Wanted Dead or Alive.
Like Bon Jovi?
Writers Gary Sherman and Siri Jones. This actually is Edgar Wright's favorite horror film.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Duncan?
Yeah, I remember a while ago. I'm a big fan of Trailers from Hell. Mm-hmm. The Joe Dante output that, you know, he gets these directors to come on and talk about the trailers that influenced them to make movies. And back then, I remember him talking about the movie. And from him talking about it, I was like, you know, I need to check this one out. And this was my first watch of it for this show.
And what did you think?
Well, this kind of shocked me because, obviously of all this guy's, filmography that he's done, the only one that I was familiar with was Dead or Alive. I've never seen Poltergeist 3 before, but I'm a big Rutger Hauer fan, so I had seen that one before. Until I did... So I had a video nasty podcast that ran for a while called Doing the Nasty, and yeah.
Oh, when's the last? You haven't done that in a while, have you?
No. So we finished it. We ran through the. So there was 72 movies that officially made the video nasty list, and of those 72 movies, we finished. We did basically 25 episodes covering them all. We are talking about returning because there was a third list. So that was the first two lists, which were prosecutable and non-prosecutable. But there was also an advisory list of about 80 movies. And we are talking about coming back to do them. However, one of the greatest finds on that, because most of the movies are awful. And it's, they're just really, really bad movies. But because they had overtly graphic cover art or maybe one scene,
titillating artwork or whatever.
Yeah, that's why they were banned. But one of the big finds for me is a movie that Gary Sherman had actually directed called Dead and Buried, which, once again, talking about Twilight Zone, is very much like Twilight Zone. I cannot recommend Dead and Buried enough. I think it is a phenomenal 80s film that no one talks about. about. And he'd done this like almost a decade after Deadline. So once you'd announced this for the show and I was reading back through it, checking online and stuff, I was like, Gary Sherman, that rings a bell. Had it on IMDb, comes up Dead and Buried. I was like, this is the Dead and Buried director? Holy shit, cannot wait to check this out. Oh, Deadline is surprisingly ahead of its time. Like, really, like, Deadline kind of floored me a little bit, because not only, once again, I tend to think about, like I did with the previous movie, I tend to think about things in terms of context of when the movie actually came out. So 72 is the same year that Last House on the Left came out, but it's also 2 years before Texas Chainsaw Massacre comes out. So this movie to me is playing on a lot of the kind of trends that you had coming off Hammer Horror, like not the, you know, vampire Hammer Horror, but more the kind of modern takes on the movies are doing. When you see the cast has got, you know, it's got Donald Pleasence and Christopher Lee in it, so two kind of genre mainstays from the UK. But the fact that this is dealing with cannibalism, social class, also on some level the way that the kind of, not even just the class, but the class war internally within the kind of forces in the UK, whether that is kind of Scotland Yard, the police itself, ordinary members of the public, and those that are classed as kind of peasants or, you know, are homeless. I thought that was done really, really well, considering out with that the movie is goofy, like really, really, really goofy about a kind of a cannibalistic homeless guy who lives in a subway and is killing people and taking them down to eat. I mean, it seems ludicrous, but it's actually handled quite well. I thought the practical effects for 72 were great. I thought Donald Pleasence played a blinder here. Absolutely loved him in this one. The overtly sarcastic police officer. Christopher Lee shows up for a little bit of time, and it's good to see him.
Wow. That was that was the only part of the movie I liked.
Really, really? See, oh, so it's a weird... We're doing a complete twist on this one.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be great.
Yeah, so I thought, like, Christopher Lee appears and his moustache is absolutely banging. I love that.
He's a guy, man. I had no idea when he was there.
Like I say, love Donald Pleasence. I think the movie's maybe arguably about 10 minutes too long, but... Yeah,
how about 2 hours?
I thought everything it was doing, though, I wasn't alive when this movie came out, so I don't know the ins and outs about things, but I am aware that London for a while was a bit of a shithole to live in, and I think the movie kind of handles that quite well. It's kind of post-swinging 60s, so we're in this era of, you know, peace, free love, and drugs didn't save the world. It's the cynical 70s.
Right.
And it carries into that. It does have a very British level of cynicism, which I think I gravitate to, like, very easily. But yeah, for the most part, as a movie I'd never seen before, I was surprised how, like I say, ahead of its time I actually think it is. I think it's doing things that Texas Chainsaw Massacre would refine quite a bit in 2 years' time. I thought the kind of the commentary, which it maybe is more pertinent to the UK, but the kind of class war commentary that they put in here, I think, is done really well. And yeah, to me, I can see why it's a movie that Edgar Wright, you know, really enjoys. If not, it's his favourite movie, because this screams to me of the kind of aesthetic that Edgar Wright has taken and adapted and modified in what he would later do. Even the sense of humour in the movie, it feels in place with something like a Shaun of the Dead. So yeah, I thought it was surprisingly good movie for one that I had never seen before. Yeah, I had quite a lot of fun with it.
Oh my God, I've got to jump in. I hate to do this, guys. You know, I usually try to wait, but oh my God, when I saw the beginning of this with that swinging 60s music and the guy wearing the bowler hat and about to head down into the into the tube. And
the goddamn out of focus shots.
Oh, out of focus shots. There were all kinds of posters lavicious posters of strippers and things like that, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. I can't fucking wait. Edgar Wright loves this movie. Oh, man, the poster just looks amazing. I just thought there was going to be so much more than what I got. I'm so sorry, Duncan. Oh, my God.
That's cool.
I fucking hated this movie. This is like the most boring piece of shit I've ever seen in my life. I thought Pleasance was fucking horrible. He was so terrible.
He was great.
Oh, my God. He was so milquetoast. And what's with that horrible joke about the tea bag? I understand. I guess if you're in England, you know, if you're old school, you know, you put your tea in the spoon or whatever and stir it within the teacup, and it comes out that way. These tea bags are a newfangled idea that these kids have. But, God damn it, if they did that joke once, they did it 12 times in the fucking movie. And then you had the chick that was coming in that looked like she was an extra on one of the Austin Powers sets that was always bringing in his tea. She said, oh, you don't like tea bags, but do you still want the tea, sir? And he says, oh, of course. It's like, oh, my God, this was terrible. I just couldn't get into this at all. And then I thought that the special effects were just ludicrous. To me, at least, the blood looked like it was pink. I don't know. Maybe I just got a bad copy of it or something. But I saw it on Showtime, so you would think that it was a legit copy.
Yeah.
It's not like I watched it on YouTube or something. But I looked at the poster and I thought, oh my God, you're going to have all these mad, crazed cannibals coming up from below the sewers and the tube, and they're going to be chasing everybody all over the city, and this is going to be an epic. And it's just going to be amazing. But you've got this one fucking vagrant that's a fucking mutant, for crying out loud. And, you know, I guess the wife he had, or the woman that he loved or whatever, died. You know, there was this terrible tragedy or what have you. And so he picks this newer chick that, I mean, good God, talk about wooden acting. Who the hell is this lady? Mike, this was terrible, guys. I'm sorry, I've said enough. I want to hear what you guys think.
Philip,
I wish I had more to say about it. I tried to watch this one late last night, and I got through just the very first scene, just the opening sequence, and I don't remember anything after that because I passed out.
Okay, well, darn it.
And I rented the motherfucker. I know. I'm like, I really wanted to watch this. It looked like it was going to be like a... like almost a really cool subway monster movie, right?
It looked so awesome. I was so
from the beginning. I'm excited about it, man. I really wanted to finish watching it. I was mad that I fell asleep.
I couldn't wait to get home and watch this. In fact, because I actually, I felt so happy because this was on Showtime like early in the morning, so I was able to record it and watch it when I got home, and then I had to get Village of the Damned through iTunes, and I was so excited to see this movie, and I was like, yes, 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 yes. And then about 10 minutes in, I was like, no, 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 no. Come on,
well,
Brian, save us, man.
This is the one I skipped, man. I'm sorry.
I can agree with. The only thing I can agree with you on, Duncan, is that I really like Donald Pleasance in this movie. But other than that, I was bored out of my mind. Oh, I was just, if he wasn't in this, I don't even know if I could finish this. I was really not clear what this movie was about. I thought it was going to be like a slasher movie.
That's what it looked like.
Until we got introduced to the guy in the subway or whatever, wherever he was at. And I was really confused on what this movie was about. And just nothing happened throughout. I did think the practical effects, I did like them. I will say that, but... other than Donald Pleasance, I did not like anybody, especially the American guy.
Oh, God. This movie, to me, looked like it was a movie directed by an American of what he thinks London was in 72. I did like the single shot. Right in the middle of the movie, they had that one single shot that went underground, and the one camera panned all the way around that one room and then went down the hallway.
When we were seeing all the bodies and stuff?
I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's other moments where you just have these long takes of, like, people walk, like at the end where they're walking down the corridor or wherever, whatever you call it. And they tell...
get these kids out of here?
Yeah, I didn't think it was necessary for us to watch them walk all the way, because the scene was just going on and nobody was saying anything, and it was... I don't know what to say about this movie. This is probably one of the most boringest movies I've reviewed on the show.
I love it. Whoa. I love different points of opinion.
Oh, shit. Duncan, I had high hopes for it.
Ready for your score, Duncan?
Yeah. Like I say, I clearly had a better time than you guys. I don't know. Maybe it just translates better over here. I don't know. And maybe it doesn't. There could be a lot of English people listening to this right now that are going, Duncan's a dickhead!
they're banging on the steering wheels.
Yeah, will not be the first time I've been called that either, and will not be the last. I think, to me, it just reminded me of a lot of movies that I like from the 70s. It kind of reminded me of a kind of British version of Deranged. Okay. I would give it exactly the same grade I gave Village of the Damned. I would give it a 7.
That's nice. Good. 7's good. For me, it's 1.5. Who's next?
Ouch. I'm going to give an 8 for the opening sequence.
Yes!
And then I fell asleep. Through no fault of the movie, I just could not keep my eyes on it.
All right, so Philip could have very well given this one an 8, Duncan.
Yep, that's what I'm taking away from this show, is Philip was an 8.
There you go.
Right. I'm going to go 3. I like
Not
Donald Pleasance.
One third good.
I thought the practicals was good. There was something in this movie that could have been good, but I just think they just missed it completely, at least for me. So I'm going to have to go 3.
I was hoping for a really bad slasher flick.
Yeah, well.
Not so much.
I was hoping for, well. All right, you guys ready for the big one? The final movie of the night?
Yeah. Yep.
Writers Ben Wheatley with Amy Jump. And I noticed this before when I saw A Field in England. It seems like she's credited with pretty much every Wheatley movie.
It's his wife.
I was speculating about that. It was either his wife or it was a Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood on the road situation. Okay. The rainbow featured prominently in the film is a real one. There was a rainbow written into another scene, but it was changed when the crew saw one during the shooting. And the scene where Jay rips off the tablecloth was taken from several episodes. This is sad. Several episodes in writer Amy Jump's actual childhood.
Yeah.
So, all right, Duncan, here we go, man. Kill list.
You had me sold on coming on your show when you said Kill List. Kill List is maybe one of my favourite British horror movies ever made. And that's no joke. I think, like, if anyone that's ever listened to podcasts under the stairs will know that I have the biggest hard-on in the world for Ben Wheatley. Ben Wheatley is, like, to me, he is the big, shiny new talent in the UK that has been working away and people are catching up. But it seems like every movie releases, maybe some more people are catching up. And if they go back and check the back catalogue, then, you know, hopefully they will enjoy it as much as, you know, the people that have been there since the start. I've been familiar with his stuff since Down Terrace, which was his first feature. And before that, he wrote for a TV show, like a weird, surreal kind of comedy show called Ideal, which I want to say it's Ideal, but it was brilliant. It's a really weird, kind of trippy, head fuck sort of TV show that used to come on at weird hours in the UK. Nice. Kind of comedy stuff, but very, very weird. Kind of stonery, but surreal. Okay. And yeah, so Kill List was getting a lot of buzz before I saw it. When it came out, the words I'd heard described to kind of put forward Kill List is like the word Wicker Man had been used. And I was like, you know, that's one of these ones where you can't just really just throw that in a conversation and expect me just to go, oh, wow, it's like the Wicker Man. Because the Wicker Man's such a
great, that's a great film. Sorry to
hear that. Yeah, but it's a wholly unique experience. You watch the Wicker, you never forget you watch with the Wicker Man. And Kill List actually surprisingly does follow a lot of the same beats. It is in effect a very similar story about a guy who is brought into a world that he doesn't understand, that is forced to kind of go through a series of different trials and then ultimately takes part in, you know, a pagan-esque ritual at the end. So, I mean, it does follow the same beats, and I can kind of see where they were coming from. It has maybe 100% less folk singing.
bartender, barkeep's daughter, huh?
No, none of that.
And the bees!
You're thinking of the remake. Let's not talk about that. We do not talk about on this podcast.
Yeah. What I will say is that what I love about Kill List is I've seen this movie about 10 times, and every time I watch it, I focus on another part of the story that I kind of thought was superfluous to the main kind of throng of it. And I find that I get more of it each time. I think it's a movie that demands to be watched at least twice to get your bearings. It is deliberately slow-paced to begin with, and even when you are watching it, you might not necessarily think it's a horror movie until someone gets attacked with a hammer, and then your world is kind of shook at that point. It gets very, very dark. Towards the end, it gets incredibly trippy. Has one of my favourite endings to a British horror movie in the last decade. And this is the movie, to me, that puts Ben Wheatley on the map as a guy who has an interesting take in looking back at specifically folk horror in the UK and updating it for a modern audience. And that's before I start talking about how great the cinematography is, how it's casted perfectly with a lot of actors that he uses in a lot of his other projects. This movie to me... I could speak for hours about my theories about exactly what's happening and all the way through the movie. I won't do that because I want people to go and check it out. But needless to say, yeah, this movie is not for everyone. And I've had plenty of people that's told me that they didn't like it, or they just didn't get it, or they don't want to think when they watch a movie. And I totally get that. To me, Kill List is it's about as close as you get to a British horror masterpiece that's come out in the last decade.
Brian, did you like it?
Yeah. Anybody that told you they didn't like it are they're wrong. This movie is fucking awesome. I loved everything. And you're right, because this was a second time watch for me. And there was things I didn't pick up when I first watched it. I did not see... I'm gonna just point out a couple things I did not see. Where the lady did the marking on the back of the mirror,
yep.
And grabbed the tissue with the blood on it. I did not remember seeing that, oh. And it kind of just put the movie in a different perspective for me. And that ending. Let me just tell you, this movie pissed my wife off. This is a movie we saw before we went to bed, and she was blown away that the fact I told her a movie that she's seen recently was Free Fire.
And
she really enjoyed that movie. And I mm-hmm. told her, well, this is the same guy that made that movie. And it just blew her mind. And that ending just really disturbed her. And I thought the acting was fine. I really like, what was the actor in it? Michael Smiley? Yeah, I really like him.
He's in a lot of Wheatley stuff, yeah.
I've seen him several times.
Yeah.
And I was the main character. I just was really rooting for him through this movie, through everything he was going through, you know. And then you got his wife just constantly, you know, in his ear about money. And then horrible. The son was horrible. I mean, he goes up and smacks him while he's shaving, and he cuts himself. And I don't know. It just added to me rooting for this guy. And then the mystery of everybody telling him that, you know, basically they know who he is, and he has no idea why.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. I love this movie.
What'd you think?
I don't know what the fuck I think about this movie. I'm so confused right now. I have no idea what the fuck is going on. But first of all, the volume mixing guy needs to be fired.
Not on my copy. You might have had a bad copy, man.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I tried to watch it on YouTube, and that was a bad idea because the volume was so low, it was dumb. And then I found another copy of it, and it was still like they have this, you know, real thick British accent anyways. And so when they talk real low and bring the volume so far down that you have to like crank that shit all the goddamn way up to hear anything, and then, you know, a plate breaks something, and it's like the whole house explodes. To be fair, I don't think that I heard a lot of the dialogue that was going on, which may contribute to my confusion because I thought I kind of knew where it was going. I like the setup. I like the way they do it. It's one of those where they drop you in the middle of this very real world and you just have to pick up on what's going on from conversations around you. Uh-huh. And, when he starts, you know, doing his little hits on people and they're like thanking him for it and saying that they know who he is and all that, I'm like, oh, okay, now we're interested. This looks cool as shit. And then the ending, I was like, I don't know where it came from. It just took a left turn somewhere. And I was like, what are all these naked people in masks doing here? How did this happen? And they're chasing him, and he's got a fucking machine gun, and he hasn't mowed them all down yet. And then the ending, I don't understand at all. I have so many questions. I don't know what I think about this movie. Yeah. Why? How did that happen?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a Ben Wheatley fan. I thought Sightseers had really good dark comedy. I've never seen Ideal, but I need to go back and check that TV series out now, Duncan. Now that you've
he was involved with the. It has about like six series, but he did an entire series of it. I think it's series 4 or 5, and it is the weirdest, trippy shit you've ever seen.
Wait. I cannot fucking wait. That's on the absolute must-watch list. And speaking of trippy, the one that he did, A Field in England, which was all shot in black and white.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Wow. If you're going to see that one, please, please, please do not see it unless you take something.
Yeah.
it helps so much. And High Rise, I watched High Rise on the airplane when we visited the UK a couple of years ago. Oh, no, actually, it was last year when we went to Spain. Mm-hmm. And I fucking loved it.
Yeah, I loved High Rise.
I loved High Rise. Good. Free Fire was a downer for me. okay, so I'm going to say, why did I mention all that? Well, because I'm going to say that this is Wheatley's masterpiece. I fucking love this movie. Everything it says about organized religion, everything it says about people getting in over their heads and getting into something that they have no business being in, and because the desperation that they relayed. So he's got an absolutely beautiful Swedish wife that he's trying so hard to keep her happy, and she's so fucking demanding, and he's got a little shit of a kid, and he's us, he's every man, and he gets this opportunity, and his wife is of course pushing him because god damn it, honey, you've got to make some money for the family here. And they already opened showing you that they're very much in debt, they've spent all their money. It is such a fucking beautiful. I love this movie. It's so gorgeous. And then the way that they do it toward the end. And if you've seen Hereditary, which we've loved that movie, saw it this year. There's so much that the director obviously took from this. Mm-hmm. And Duncan, I love the fact that you mentioned the movie on Summer Isle.
Wicker Man.
Right now. Wicker Man, thank you. The original, the only real Wicker Man film.
Not Nicolas Cage.
Oh my god, there's so many parallels here.
Yeah.
And it's just it's so difficult for me to even say what this movie meant to me, but it's so special. And the dialogue was fantastic. The parts at the end just had me on the edge of my seat. The way that this guy turned, so, you know, it showed him very gradually, you know, more and more buying into this thing and realizing that, you know, he was an animal. People are animals. And he became a full animal because he wanted to take care of his wife and his family. And he was willing to do the things that these strange people told him that he had to do and, you know, go down this kill list or whatever. And then at the end, we find out that nobody was quite going after who you thought they were going after. And it was all... They leave a lot to the imagination, which I really appreciate when a movie ends that way. But it was just so creepy. It had the hair standing up on the back of my neck when you got into the last 10 minutes of the movie. When people started showing up and they hanged that person who wanted to be hanged. Mm-hmm. And they just had that big smile and just so fucking creepy. Masterpiece. My favorite Wheatley movie so far.
I need to rewatch this one.
I think you do.
I missed a lot of things.
The scene where the religious nuts started going into song and the guy was playing guitar. And he went over and he was just so irritated with that because of the fucking formal religion bent. And come to find out he's involved in the oldest religion, or the oldest religion in England, which I guess is, maybe this is the same cult that created Stonehenge. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But beautiful movie. I really loved it.
A bunch of naked people created Stonehenge. I'm not buying that.
Oh, absolutely. Duncan, how much do you know about ancient religion, man, in the islands?
In Scotland, or just in the UK in general? Because Stonehenge
Ireland,
is
the UK.
Yeah, Stonehenge is like there's still people confused about how, because the stones from Stonehenge are not they weren't sourced in England. They were sourced in Wales, and realistically, they don't know how they got them from there because of the size and weight of them. How they managed to transport them from, well, yeah, this is the one of the prevailing theories. Plus, where it lies is on a ley line as well, like a religious ley line. Which doesn't make like how they knew that when they were designing it. All these things that come out where I just think that, you know, people a long time ago were a lot smarter than we give them credit for. When you're rewatching the film again, Phil, look at it from the point of view of from the moment she draws the symbol, the kill list symbol, on the back of the mirror, that is the beginning of the ritual. Look at it from that point of view. And everything from that point onwards in the movie is a trial that he has to go through to basically initiate himself as almost like a savior to their ritual. And when you watch it, the viewing experience takes on a completely different tone. It makes it a completely different movie. But if you look at it from that point of view, just kind of follow through. Each of them is a trial, so to speak.
Was the wife involved the whole time?
No, I don't think so. I think she's drugged at the end. So I think that's the last sacrifice that he has to do.
Oh, and the poor child, huh?
Yeah, that's the last sacrifice that he has to complete in order to become
the king.
Yeah, to be the Messiah. Like, very much like Hereditary is a great comparison. It's exactly that sort of idea that he has to. That's why they dress her up. They drug her and dress her up to look and put the kid on the back to make it look different as well.
The hunchback,
to give it a different physique. So it's all designed that way. It's purely from the moment that she draws that symbol, that's the beginning of their religious event, very similar to in Hereditary from the, and no spoiler from me on that one because that's a modern movie, but right from the moment the event happens that you're not expecting, that leaves your jaw on the ground, and that movie from there is the start of an initiation towards a ritual at the end. It's really, really, really well done. It's like it's incredibly well done. And like I say, you'd be able to watch it about four or five times and still pick out things you didn't pick out before. Characters in the background, certain phrases that are said that have more importance. It's layered. It's layered in a way that a lot of movies aren't. I think it's, in my personal opinion, it's Ben Wheatley's best movie. And I think he's done. I love the fact that he genre jumps. I know Lance was saying you kind of thought Free Fire to me is the movie he wanted to make, which was an ode to the love that he has for. I mean, he's got a huge love for 70s cinema just in general, and that's his nod to kind of 70s kind of crime capers. And he's got that in his system. The next movie he's talking about doing, whether or not he is actually doing it, is some, I need to find the name of it because it is the funniest name you've ever heard for a movie ever.
Freak Shift?
Freak Shift, which is about, let's see if we've got here, a band of misfits hunt down and kill underground nocturnal monsters. Sign me up.
That's what Raw Meat should have been for me.
That's what I thought it was going to be.
Which, to be honest, I would it would not surprise me if that's what he's basing it on. 70s movie, after
Wouldn't surprise me in the least.
And he's also working on a filmized version of the Ideal TV show as well. So there you go.
Oh, yes. I can't. I got to go back and check out that show. So you guys ready for scores?
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Very good. Because we could talk about this forever. Duncan, what do you think, man? 1 to 10.
It's 10. It's a 10. Ooh,
nice. Yeah.
I'm going to go 9.5.
Wow.
Really, really love this movie.
Philip?
Can I give it a question mark? Is that a score?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have our first question mark ever after 114 episodes.
Legit is my score, I'm telling you right now. I'm going to watch it again, though. I'll give you another score because I liked it. I'm just super fucking confused. I couldn't hear the goddamn thing.
You need to see it again on a good format, man.
Yeah.
This is my second watch. Easy 9 for me. Easily my favorite Wheatley movie, and I expect great things for him in the years to come, for sure. So, I definitely give it a 9, and whatever year it came out, it was probably my favorite movie that year, I'm guessing. I think it was, about 10 years ago, maybe?
2012, I think, is when it made its way to the States. 2011 in the UK. So, yeah, it's 7-8 years.
All right, good deal. So, before we sign off, Duncan, can you tell our listeners again where to find you?
Yeah, please come across and check out my show, The Podcast Under the Stairs. You can check it out on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/TPutzCast. That's TPUTS cast. Or visit the website, tputzcast.com. I also do a show called Duncan and Bo Come Correct. It's available on Legion Podcast Network. And gents, just before you sign off, can I say it's been an absolute privilege, pleasure, and honor coming on your show. Thank you very much for the invite.
Thank you for coming on.
Definitely appreciate it, man. So,
yeah, it was awesome. I want to eat your accent with a spoon.
All right, so let's shout out to the real heroes here. As always, we want to thank all of you, the listeners, for listening to another episode of The Horror Returns. We would love to hear your feedback and ideas. You can reach us at thehorrorreturns@gmail.com. Be sure to follow us. Where, Brian?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr. Join our Facebook group also.
Great discussion group, man. So next week, it's Giant Shark Week. Or as Bede would say, Shock Week. We're going to check out Meg. God damn it. I don't want to, but you guys are making me, so.
Fucking for real. This looks amazing.
And you know what? You know what really sucks? You know what really kicks me in the fucking nuts?
That you're going to love it?
No, that I can't use my movie pass, man.
Oh. Yeah.
All right. So we'll check out Meg and whatever. What, Brian, what is this Last Shark thing, man? Come on.
I have not seen it. Nez recommended it.
Okay.
It's The Last Shark, also known as Great White, from 1981.
All right. Well, the only thing that makes me sleep at night is knowing that cocksucker's going to have to watch it, too, because he's going to be on the show with us. And, Patrick, like I said, man, we're all rooting for you, and we need you to be on the show with us next week. So, Phil, until the horror returns again.
Good night.